Hello everyone, and welcome back to the History of Scotland, episode 19, The Fiction of Macbeth. So where have I been this past month? It's been a while since we have spoke. Well, I've been very busy with work, which has meant I haven't really had the time to write the scripts for these episodes, in all honesty. However, over the Jubilee weekend, I visited the city of Newcastle. It was actually my second visit, but we took the time, me and my other half, to explore Newcastle the city. We got to go visit the castle on top of the hill, as well as the Black Gate next to it. It was great to learn so much information I didn't know about the role the castle played in the Borderlands Wars between Scotland and England. There were some interesting stories where we dressed up as knights, and the guy taught us a lot about how the castle withheld people such as William Wallace, who was not able to take the castle and keep due to how defensible it was, and instead he went for smaller targets around the area instead. And you learned a lot about the northern English families as well, such as the Percys. So I would really highly recommend anyone visiting these two monuments in Newcastle, any history nuts that is. You learn quite a lot about medieval history as well as the later history it played during the revolution of industrial. So in the industrial revolution, for example, the castle was going to be knocked down, and if it weren't for a certain rich family buying the castle to keep it afloat, the castle would no longer exist, which is quite sad if you think about it, but you know, props to the family that saved the castle. But all of this was actually mentioned on Twitter, and I'm not sure if you guys realize, but we do actually have a Twitter profile that you can follow. The Twitter profile can be found with the following username. It is the History of SC1. That's all one word. I'll repeat it again. The History of SC1. All one word, that is our tag. Or you can just type in the History of Scotland on Twitter, and I'm sure you'd be able to find us with our logo. Also, I have created a Facebook group called The History of Scotland. Again, if you search that on Facebook, you should be able to find it. If you wish to discuss any of the episodes with myself and give any feedback and comments, please head there. Both links, however, can be found on our Podbean website, so head to thehistoryofscotland.podbean.com if you wish to find those links. If you're already listening on Podbean, you probably should already know where to go, but if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Music, look for the original website link above and you should be able to link it back to the main area. Anyway, shall we get back to our scheduled programming? Last time in our story, we went through the reign of Macbeth, the new king of both the north of Scotland and the area around Moray, and the Kingdom of Alba, which joined together the north, which was Moray, and the lands of the Kingdom of Alba under one rule. We learnt about how the chroniclers, contrary to popular belief, really glorified and loved Macbeth's reign and viewed him as a great warrior Scottish king. The man that would be turned into a villain in Shakespeare's play was in reality a great king who overthrew a tyrant, Duncan I, and helped Scotland prosper for many years. Duncan I's son, Malcolm Canmore, or otherwise known as Malcolm III, would overthrow Macbeth and kill him in battle. Yes, taking revenge upon his father's death, but more importantly, taking down what many considered as a great king. Malcolm III would also, in the future, changed Scotland. Due to his time spent in the English court, like we mentioned last episode, he will change Scotland to a Norman English style court, further changing the tribal style system in power at the moment. But we're going to go into that in next week's episode, and we'll start Malcolm III's reign next week. This week, let's take a look at Macbeth in fiction, mainly using the sources from Shakespeare himself and other plays and books created depicting Macbeth. How does this truth change to the stories being told from what we learned last time? What was the history behind the play creation? What are the themes of the play as well? Well, why don't we find out and as we dive into English students' worst nightmare, Macbeth. So, Macbeth is known to be a fierce brave Scottish soldier. He is betrayed to be a ruthless warrior, slaughtering anyone in order to serve and be loyal to his country. He is also said to be dedicated and loyal to his wife, Lady Macbeth. Macbeth proves to be a man who is greatly influenced by his wife's ideas and ambition at the start of the play. When Lady Macbeth is introduced, she immediately starts plotting Duncan's murder. She is much stronger, more ruthless, and more ambitious than Macbeth himself. This is the complete opposite as to how women were viewed at the time of Shakespeare, who wrote the play. Being a soldier, Macbeth has experienced and been surrounded by horror and death. He had killed many in his lifetime. I did not think twice about it. However, he found it extremely emotionally draining, contemplating whether or not to kill the king. He was slowly going insane from the guilt before any crime had been committed. The Macbeth scene at the start of the play compared to the Macbeth scene at the end of the play are the complete opposites. The need for power drives Macbeth until he goes against everything he's known for. He becomes power hungry, greedy, and ambitious. It seems as though he becomes insane mainly because he is feeling both ambition and guilt at the same time. Macbeth is a play, as we know, written around 1606 by William Shakespeare. Shakespeare was writing for the theatre during the reigns of Queen Elizabeth I and King James I. The plays he wrote around the time Queen Elizabeth was in control, such as Midsummer Night's Dreams, contains themes of confidence, happiness, and love. However, the plays he wrote during the reign of King James, such as Macbeth, were much more cynical and dark, reflecting the insecurities of King James. Macbeth is known as one of Shakespeare's most strong and forceful plays. The play was written in 1606, a time in history that was called the Elizabethan era. The Elizabeth era was an age of discovery and of expansion, including the New World. Shakespeare's plays were written for the average man or woman in the street. The concerns of the time were reflected in Shakespeare's plays, many of which feature kings and queens struggling to hold on to power or having it taken away from them by someone considered evil. The question whether one person's ambition should or could be more important than the common good is clearly evident in Shakespeare's play Macbeth. In Act 2, Scene 1, Macbeth's ambitions fought off slowly forcing him to commit. In the Shakespearean era, witches were associated with the dark and the deaf, similar to the Doctor Who episode, if any Doctor Who fans are out there. They were said by many Christian countries to be agents of Satan, performing evil acts at night. When Shakespeare wrote Macbeth, witchcraft and supernatural happenings were of high interest. King James I was highly engaged with the idea of witchcraft, and even wrote a book about the topic. He used them for his play, and many of his audience would have believed in as evil servants as well, trapping the power of men and women. In Act 2, Scene 1, Shakespeare mentions witchcraft throughout the entry. Nature seems dead, and the wicked dreams abuse. The curtain sleep, witchcraft celebrate. He even goes as far to mention a goddess of witchcraft in the ancient Greeks during this line, which just more symbolizes the superstition around witches during this era in history. Religious thinkers, however, in the Middle Ages, had come up with the idea of the great chain of being. This was a belief held by many that God had designed an ordinary system for both nature and humankind. Everything had its place in the great chain of being. It was considered a sin against God for anybody to try and alter their station in the chain. The divine rights throughout Shakespeare's time and beyond, monarchs were seen as being God's deputies or disciples on earth, having a divine right to rule. The monarch had absolute power, and an attack on him or her, even a verbal one, was considered to be a treason. In Macbeth, it was a shock to the audience when Macbeth had planned to kill the King of Scotland. This was meant at the time it would have been an incredibly dangerous crime to commit, as it was going against all beliefs. In Act 2, Scene 1 again, Macbeth was feeling guilty even before he had committed the crime because he knew it, that it was against all gods. In that time, it would have been one of the biggest scandals ever committed in history. He was disturbing the great chain of being, altering the complete nature of mankind. Therefore, Shakespeare wrote this scene to show how the craving for power led him to do something never ever heard of. This is another reason as to why Macbeth began to see hallucinations and a vision of the mind, mainly from absolute fear for all he is going against. If we look at the man himself, William Shakespeare, he was born in Stratford-upon-Avon in Warwickshire in April 1564. He was a prominent local family man and would have received a good education. In 1582, aged 18, Shakespeare married Anne Hathaway. By 1592, he was a playwright in London. Quite what took him from a comfortable existence and marriage in Stratford-upon-Avon to no doubt more prestigious life in the Elizabethan theatre, we do not know, but the talented Shakespeare undoubtedly prospered. By 1594, Shakespeare was an actor, writer, and joint owner of a playing company that became so popular it was adopted by King James I following his succession to the throne in 1603. The company then became known as the King's Men. Shakespeare's output of plays and poetry was in quantity and quality. As well as being regarded as the world's greatest writer of the English language, his works have been translated into every other major living language. The play Macbeth was probably written sometime between 1603 and 1606 to celebrate James I's Stuart ancestors and his ascension to the throne. James, son of the executed Mary Queen of Scots, was King James VI of Scotland. And just to go back furthermore, his ancestors were obviously of the Bruce lineage, going that far back. And obviously the Bruce lineage would have some connection to our Scottish kings of Alba today. So you can always joke with an Englishman that it's actually the descendants of the royal family came from a Scottish line as well as English line. But as we always know, the royal family have a bit of everything in them in terms of European country heritage. Anyway, back to the story of Shakespeare. Shakespeare died in 1616, aged 52, having retired to Stratford 3 years earlier. His life and works continue to be celebrated worldwide. Shakespeare was a poet, a dramaticist, not a historian, and he relied on published sources for his plays. Primary contemporary sources for Macbeth are fragmentary and few in number, and there were no paintings of him made in his lifetime. By the time one of the earliest Scottish chroniclers, John of Fordon, came to publish his History of Scotland in the late 14th century, Macbeth had become the stuff of mythology rather than history. Walter Bower's 15th century continuation of Fordon's work became known as the Scotochronicon, and the purported sum of some of the myths and sheer fantasies about Scotland's history. The process of myth-making was helped also by the writings of the poet Robert Winton. Winton was a prior of the St. Serfs in Loch Leven, a monastic community Macbeth and Gruach had granted land to. In 1527, Hector Beock's 17-volume Scotochronicum Historiae was published, adding a further layer of mythology and bias to the representation of Scotland's early history, and Beock's work was in turn used as a source by Raphael Holinshed, whose Chronicles of England, Scotland and Ireland were published later that century. Shakespeare used the second edition of Holinshed's Chronicle for the plot of Macbeth, compounding the errors of early historians, adding his own dramatic spin and creating the myth that is Macbeth. Compelling work of drama, it certainly is. Authentic history, it most certainly is not. As we have discussed in our last episode, the real Macbeth is completely different. While we may wish to understand the real Macbeth and his times, the turbulent 11th century when what was to become Scotland began to take shape, we should not forget that the fictional Macbeth, dramatised and made infamous by Shakespeare, has been the inspiration for creative people for hundreds of years. Macbeth, with its themes of supernatural, the lust for power, and the betrayal of friends, has become almost a universal story. In films, it has been transported to feudal Japan, during the Throne of Blood, released in 1957. Other film adaptations have included resetting the story in Chicago, New York, Melbourne, and Mumbai. Justin Cazale's 2015 movie, starring Michael Fassbender and Marion Cotillard, provides a gritty interpretation of Shakespeare's play, set in the dramatic landscape of medieval Scotland. It was an okay film, and I was so-so with it. It was an alright film. It's hard to know the real history behind things and enjoy the film, but it was still set within, I would consider, a bit of the wrong era. Michael was a great actor for Macbeth. Marion was okay. I just feel the story was a bit all over the place in terms of how it was trying to portray the play. But that may be my English student hatred of seeing hundreds of films based on the book just coming out, so who knows. In books, Terry Pratchett parodied Macbeth in his book The Word Sisters, setting Macbeth's story in the famous Discworld. While in music, Macbeth has been inspiration for traditional opera, including works by Verdi and Shostakovich, and rock opera, as well as works in other genres. As a tragedy, Macbeth is a dramatization of the psychological repercussions of unbridled ambition. The play's main themes, loyalty, guilt, innocence, and fate, all deal with the central idea of ambition and its consequences. Similarly, Shakespeare uses imagery and symbolism to illustrate the concepts of innocence and guilt. If we look to more the themes of what the play suggests, and what we just went over, ambition. Macbeth's ambition is his tragic flaw. Devoid of any morality, it ultimately causes Macbeth's downfall. Two factors stroke the flames of his ambition. The prophecy of the three witches, who claim that not only will he be the Thane of Cawdor, but also king, and even more, the attitude of his wife, who taunts his assertiveness and manhood, and actually stage directs her husband's actions. Macbeth's ambition, however, soon spirals out of control. He feels that his power is threatened to a point where it can only be preserved through murdering his suspected enemies. Eventually, ambition causes both Macbeth and Lady Macbeth's undoing. He is defeated in battle and decapitated by Macduff, while Lady Macbeth succumbs to insanity and commits suicide. Loyalty plays out in many ways in Macbeth. At the beginning of the play, King Duncan rewards Macbeth with the title of the Thane of Cawdor, after the original Thane betrayed him and joined forces with Norway, while Macbeth was a valiant general. However, when Duncan names Malcolm his heir, Macbeth comes to the conclusion that he must kill King Duncan in order to become king himself. In another example of Shakespeare's loyalty and betrayal dynamic, Macbeth betrays Banquo out of paranoia. Although the pair were comrades in arms, after he becomes king, Macbeth remembers that the witches predicted that Banquo's descendants would ultimately be crowned kings of Scotland. Macbeth then decides to have him killed. Macduff, who suspects Macbeth once he sees the king's corpse, flees to England to join Duncan's son Malcolm, and together they plan Macbeth's downfall. Bit of slight history in that part. Obviously, the true part was Malcolm heading to England and staying at the court of the English kings. So, at least this part is true to the story. False face must hide what the false heart don't know, Macbeth tells Duncan when he already has intentions to murder him near the end of Act 1. At the same time, the witches pronounce fair is foul and foul is fair, subtly play with the appearance and reality. Their prophecy, stating that Macbeth can't be vanquished by any child of woman born, is rendered vain when Macduff reveals that he was born via a Carcassarian section. In addition, the assurance that he would not be vanquished until the great Brynian wood tied Dunsail Hill shall come against him is at first deemed as a natural phenomenon, as a forest would not walk up a hill. But in reality, it meant that the soldiers were cutting up trees in Brynian wood to get closer to the hill. If we look at fate and free will, would Macbeth have become king had he not chosen his murderous path? This question brings into play the matters of fate and free will. The witches predict that he would become the Fane, and soon after he is anointed that title without any action required of him. The witches show Macbeth his future and his fate, but Duncan's murder is a matter of Macbeth's own free will, and after Duncan's assassination, the future and further assassinations are a matter of his own planning. This also applies to the other visions the witches conjure for Macbeth. He sees them as a sign of his invincibility and acts accordingly, but they actually anticipate his demise. Light and starlight symbolise what is good and noble, and the moral order brought by King Duncan announce that signs of nobleness like stars shall shine on all deserves. By contrast, the three witches are known as Midnight Hags, and Lady Macbeth asks the night to cloak her actions from the heaven. Also, once Macbeth becomes king, day and night become indistinguishable from one another. When Lady Macbeth displays her insanity, she wants to carry a candle with her as a form of protection. In Macbeth, sleep symbolises innocence and purity. For instance, after murdering King Duncan, Macbeth is in such distress that he believes he heard a voice saying, "Methought I heard a voice cry, sleep no more. Macbeth does murder sleep. The innocent sleep, the sleep that knights up the ravelled sleet of care." He goes on to compare sleep to a soothing bath after a day of hard work, and to the main course of a feast, feeling that when he murdered his king in his sleep, he murdered sleep itself. At the same time, he sends killers to murder Banquo. Macbeth laments being constantly shaken by nightmares and by restless ecstasy, where the word ecstasy loses any positive connotations. When Macbeth sees Banquo's ghost at the banquet, Lady Macbeth remarks that he lacks the season of all natures, sleep. Eventually, her sleep becomes disturbed as well. She becomes prone to sleepwalking, reviving the horrors of Duncan's murder. But blood in Macbeth. Blood symbolises murder and guilt, and imagery of it pertains to both Macbeth and Lady Macbeth. For example, before killing Duncan, Macbeth hallucinates a bloody dagger pointing towards the king's room. After committing the murder, he is horrified and says, "Will all great Neptune's ocean wash this blood clean from my hand? No." Banquo's ghost, who appears during a banquet, exhibits glory locks. Locks in his hair that are bloody. Blood also symbolises Macbeth's own acceptance of his guilt. He tells Lady Macbeth, "I am in blood, stepped into out so that should I wade no more, returning were as tedious as go over." Blood eventually also affects Lady Macbeth, who in her sleepwalking scene wants to clean blood from her hands in that famous washing hands. For Macbeth and Lady Macbeth, blood shows that their guilt trajectory runs in opposite directions. Macbeth turns from being guilty into a ruthless murderer, whereas Lady Macbeth, who starts off as a more assertive than her husband, becomes ridden with guilt and eventually kills herself. Let's finally close the book on Macbeth then. After we've gone over the themes of the play, the history of how the play was written, its modern impacts, and obviously in last week's episode we went through the true story of Macbeth and we found out who actually was Macbeth in true historical fashion. Macbeth was probably one of history's most misunderstood characters. A ruler at the time who was a great king and helped bring Scotland to a more European standing, uniting most of Scotland under his rule. But one that, due to Shakespeare, has his history changed into one of tragedy and portrayed as a villain to the common person. To me, he was a great ruler, one of the best we have had so far. Yet his rule will be overshadowed by his killer and the next king. But still, a ruler I've had the utmost pleasure to learn more about and understand how great he really was in the end. Next week, however, let's start with his killer, Malcolm Canmore, Malcolm III. At the start of his reign, just as he defeated Macbeth and killed him in battle. Yes, taking revenge upon his father's death, but more importantly, taking down what many considered as the great Scottish king. Malcolm III would forever change Scotland due to his time spent in the English court. Like we mentioned in the last episode, the court, everything will change to a Norman-style system, and the tribal system would be gone forever in the government. But that is for next week. Thank you again to everyone for the continued support on this series. If you have the time, please go follow our Twitter, again at thehistoryofsc1, or type in the History of Scotland in Twitter. We also have a Facebook group called The History of Scotland. Please head there, give the page a like, join the page, enter the discussions and feedback about Scottish history. As always, any corrections or issues with the podcast, please let me know at historyofscotlandpodcast@gmail.com. That is historyofscotlandpodcast@gmail.com, or give me a tweet or message me in the Facebook group. As always as well, please leave a review if you haven't already, and our podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, and many other great podcasting sites. We will be returning to normal scheduling, so next week our podcast will air as normal. But until then, stay safe, have a great week guys, and I'll catch you all on the next one. Peace.